Hello, and welcome to All the Best. Big thanks to Luke Rodley for welcoming us to the weekend. He'll be back again next Saturday morning to get you out of bed. My name's Eliza Salas, and I'll be with you this morning for the next hour as we explore the theme of residence. You may have twigged it from the song we're hearing currently. We'll be taking a trip not just around Sydney, but up the eastern side of this country as we discover what it's like to move to a small country town, what it's like being the first in your family to be born in Australia, and what happens as you make preparations to leave home as you know it forever. We're also asking you what's been your worst sharehouse experience. I'm not just talking about dirty dishes or paper-thin walls. We want your tales of sharehouses that were the total pits. All through the show, I'll be asking you to text us on 0409 945 945 and let us know what you lived through. We've already got one in, which is a bit of a corker. Sandra used to live with an NRL footballer. One night he brought home two girls and a guy and then proceeded to have an orgy upstairs in his room. Her other flatmate heard them and went upstairs, turned the lights on and told them to get out. Footballer then asked for just two more minutes. He moved out without telling anyone. 2 days later, all his stuff was gone and he left the keys on the table. I think that's probably the best result. Let us know your horror sharehouse story. 0409 945 945. Be part of the show today as we explore the theme of residence. The unmistakable sounds of madness with Our House. You're listening to All the Best on FBI this morning. Each week on our show, we pick a theme as our starting point and go from there. Today, we're looking at residents, the houses and homes that define our lives. We're also asking you, what's been the absolute worst sharehouse experience you've lived through? Text us on 0409 945 945. My worst sharehouse experience. It's not actually mine, but happened at a house I used to live in where the studio out the back was rented by a woman who had no fridge. So when it came to her trying for a baby, she stored sperm not in her fridge, but in my old one, which is totally the grossest thing I can think of. Let us know your worst shared living experience. 0409 945 945.
Stories from Sydney on All the Best.
Moving house tops a lot of lists when it comes to hellish experiences. But what if you're moving from the familiar surrounds of Mount Cola to rural New South Wales in a town just outside of Orange? Miles Martignoni did just that a couple of weeks ago and brings us this next story from 1497 Belgravia Road in a town where they have roads long enough to get up to 1497, called Malong.
Yeah, I'm feeling excited. Well, I guess that didn't sound like it had a lot of conviction behind it. I do feel excited, but I guess I am a little bit wary. You know, I don't know anything about Orange, and I'm going to move there. And I like Sydney, you know, I like my friends, I like the things I do, you know. But, you know, I am keen to make the move. I just think it'll be different, and I'm not sure how. It's a 4-hour drive. For driving, you need a good variety of music, something relaxing and soaring to get you out of the city traffic. Something talky to keep your mind going.
On Christmas Eve every year, Elena and her mom.
And something you can sing along to in ways no one will ever hear.
Right back in the same place. Right back in the same place. Well, like we started out.
Unless you record it. So, if I had to describe Orange, well, I'd have to say beautiful. I mean, it's just a beautiful countryside. You know, I love driving around the town. Inside the town, there's like 40,000 people here. It's not a small town. There's plenty of shops and bustle and. When you drive through the town, you still get really annoyed at all the traffic lights and all the traffic, so in some ways it is like home, but you can kind of go around that, which is a nice difference. When the sun goes down, the whole sky goes pink and purple, and I didn't really seem to see that in Sydney. I'm not sure why it's so different out here, but it really is quite a spectacular sight. At night, it's pitch black. That's something that's quite different. I'm living on a pony farm just outside of Orange, and, you know, there's no streetlights here, so when it goes dark, it really goes dark, and sometimes the only thing that's creating light is the moon. I like my flat. You could probably fit like 4 or 5 cars in it, so it's not exactly tiny. And I got my kitchen, couch, TV, you know, sleeping thing, a bed, that's what it's called, a bed, and bathroom, you know, everything I need. It's, you know, I'm looking forward to filling it up with a few things to make it feel a bit more like home. So I've been trying to spruce up the granny flat. I bought some cheap, nice teacups, and, you know, I put my computer down. I put a few pieces of vinyl up near the wall, so that's some nice little bits of art. Put a few books, and, you know, it's strange how these little things can really make it seem a bit more like home. And I'm trying to make it a bit more convenient now. I've bought a couple of bits of flat pack furniture, a desk and a shelf. Flat pack furniture is that kind of stuff that you, Well, it really is flat. It's almost two-dimensional, I'd say. And then you tear it out of its box, put it together, and it's a three-dimensional object. So I'm going to put together my shelf. Just let me put this down so that I can actually do it. Okay, there. Now, the first step of putting together good, cheap, flat-pack furniture is having snacks. The correct snacks. I've decided on cold tea and raspberry shortcake biscuits. The second part of putting together good flat pack furniture is knowing what you're doing on our own. Done!
And there's only 24 pieces extra.
It's lovely here. The people are nice, but you do kind of feel a little bit left out. Coming from the city, I'm really appreciating the place and the people more than I perhaps thought I would. And, well, I guess I do kind of feel like an outsider at times, but everyone's been really nice and really trying to kind of let you in on the in-jokes and tell you how to make the most of your time here and things like that. But you do really seem to appreciate that there are people that really don't care about the city and don't really think it's that big a deal and, you know, would think it would be stupid to move into the city. Whereas I've kind of come from there, and it's quite a difference coming from Sydney to here and seeing that there really is like a whole other side of this country that, you know, I guess I always knew was there, but I never really... I guess it's a difference between knowing and understanding.
Miles Martignoni on his move from Mount Cola to Malong, just outside of Orange. You're on All the Best, where this morning we are looking at residents. Up soon, we discover what it's like to be without a home and hear from someone who was so affected by his home growing up, he wrote a book about it. We are also asking you this morning what your worst sharehouse experience has been. And there are a ton coming through. If you want to let us know your worst sharehouse experience, text us on 0409 945 945. We've got a message in from Brad, who once lived with a girl in Camperdown who was having an affair with an older married photographer. One day he dumped her, so she broke a large branch off a tree across the road and put it in her room. Then she surrounded it with burning candles in her room as a symbol of her broken love, which is, you know, quite lovely, really. She then went to sleep and burnt the house down. Brad woke up at 3 a.m. to a blazing fire. Luckily, the carpet was 15 years old, which made it a fire hazard. So they got the insurance from the real estate company. But all the same, imagine having your house burned down by the broken heart of your housemate. I don't know. I'm sure there are some more shockers out there. Text us on 0409 945 945. We are after your absolute worst share living experience. here on All the Best on FBI at 94.5, where we're all about residents this morning. We have been asking you what has been your worst sharehouse experience. We've had a bunch of listeners write in. You can tell us your worst sharehouse experience on 0409 945 945. We've got a text in from Rob, who was living in southern Spain when he went on a holiday to Madrid for a week. Came home with the house unclean for days after a party. All the food was gone, not a single pot, pan, plate, cup clean, and one flatty had left her used tampon on the vanity top, blood dripping down to the floor. That's up there with the gross things. Rob moved out next week. We've also got another one. Someone who had a girl who was a dope addict with an AVO move into his non-smoking, no drugs house. Her dog attacked his dog twice. She started smoking dope secretly in the house, and one day his neighbor rang him at work in a panic as he had heard the girl on her phone making threats about our listener because he washed her black shirt with a tissue by accident. After the girl was evicted, this guy went to throw out her old laundry detergent box only to find used tampons in it. Is there a theme? Is that what the bad housemates of Sydney do? I'm not sure. Text us in your horror stories of share living. 0409 945 945.
Stories from Sydney on FBI.
A house is not just a roof over your head. A place to live is much more than the physical bricks and mortar that make up a home. But what if you didn't have one? For many people in Sydney, they don't have a place to call their own. Their stories are often not told or put out of mind quickly. Gemma Maglione went out to find a story like this, and she found it in an unlikely person, someone she walks past all the time but has never spoken to. It was a local seller of the Big Issue, right near Centre Point Tower. This is his story.
If you compare it to being, say, a 10-year-old kid living at home and the feeling that you felt then, nah, it's nothing like that. You know, like, you just felt safe back then. Just felt like, you know, everything was cool, and you went to bed and you put your head on the pillow and you fell asleep, you know. Well, I guess that's part of the process of going through life, you know. I'm not 10 anymore anyway. I've met some people in my travels that want to be homeless, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean they're happy just traversing the streets, and that's the way they do it. But then I've met some people that have that really need help to get off the street, and they're trying their hardest to get off the street, but they can't seem to find a way out of the loop that they're in.
He grew up on Sydney's northern beaches, where he lived for many years after finishing school. After uni, he got a job at Today FM, working his way to the newsroom.
Well, I grew up over in the DY area. Went through school and did all of that, and everything to me was pretty normal as far as I was concerned. I didn't actually complete my uni course because, being 19, I thought I didn't really have to. Then got the job in radio and went from there. But unfortunately for me, it didn't really work out, because 11 months later, the boss and I decided it wasn't actually the right avenue for me. And so from there, I sort of went to a bit of a limbo and didn't really know what I was going to do, and ended up doing a couple of different jobs.
Confusion led to isolation, living homeless, and getting into drugs. Around this time, he was also diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Things happened, and I don't really want to say it like this, but I had a child, and I love my daughter dearly, don't get me wrong. Now, she's a beautiful child, but it was something that really confused me, and that's where the problems started. I started doing things that aren't really good for you, the things that you do on the street, like drugs and stuff like that, and basically left myself in a pretty deep hole. If I had the money to stay somewhere for a night, I'd just pay for a night's accommodation in a hotel, and that'd be it, you know, and the rest of the time I'd just spend the night walking around or sleeping on a bench or doing whatever. It's real denial. You think it's everybody else, it's not you, you know, it's not my problem, you're the problem, leave me alone. And so you end up isolating yourself so much that even the people that love you dearly can't get anywhere near you. And it's really hard. But I also suffer from bipolar. So I've been struggling with that, struggling with the fact that I've got it, first of all, and then secondly, of dealing with the medication because it's pretty hard to get those things sorted out. Yeah, it was up and down, and that's what bipolar is, though. It's up and down. Like one day, you know, or one morning, I'm, hey, this is a great day, and then lunchtime, I'm like, oh, I'm a shithead. And then by, you know, the afternoon, oh, I'm all right, and then by nighttime, it's like, oh, I'm a shithead. And so, you know, it's not a lot you can do. And so, you know, when things get to their worst, you know, you really, you start to think, no, I've got to do something. And, you know, by that stage, I've got an 8-year-old child who's living with a mother who's trying her best to, you know, bring her up. And, you know, I'm being no help whatsoever. Having somewhere of your own, knowing I can go back there and sit down and think, okay, this is my space, not somebody else's space, it's a big factor. It makes a lot of difference, because if I had, say, a flatmate or possibly live with my mum or something like that, I'd feel responsible to her and would feel that, you know, I'd have to limit myself to my bedroom or something like that.
Friends suggested that he become a seller for the big issue. It was the opportunity to be around people again that drew him to the job.
I started to get back on track. Because the big issue, the way it's set up, it's not a full-time job, it's not a part-time job, so you don't have a boss to answer to. You know, some days I can't work or I don't feel like working, and if I've got a specific time I've got to turn up, say to a part-time job, the boss is going to say, well, what the hell's going on? And I couldn't handle that.
After spending some time at the Matthew Talbot Hostel, he applied for a flat through the Housing Commission and was successful.
I got out of the Talbot basically because I snore like a train, and the guys down at the Talbot kept waking me up going, stop snoring, and it's like, I can't help it. You know, so I needed to get somewhere where I could just sleep, you know, and have a good night's sleep. But I didn't care what area, I didn't care how big the place was, I just wanted a place of my own. I got out of the Talbot, I got into my own place, and I thought, oh yeah, this is great, you know, I'll start to get things together now, I'll find a job and I'll do this, that and the other. And I spent like 2 years basically sitting around my home, going to get medication and then coming home again. Basically, at the moment, I just read a lot of books, which is something I haven't done for a long while. But I also go for a lot of walks and just make sure I take care of myself, taking my medication regularly and just, you know, taking it one step at a time. And that way I can get steady in my life so that I can get my daughter back into my life. Work that I see that's being done at the moment, I think is a big step forward from 20 years ago when it was just, oh, you know, they're bums, don't worry about them. Whereas nowadays there's a lot more talk about the psychological illnesses of the people that live on the street. I still think we've got a long way to go, but I think we're making the right steps.
A man who was once homeless for a long period in his life, but now back on his feet with a roof over his head. He was talking to Gemma Maglione with production from Mike Williams. Because of the intimate details in that piece, the man preferred to remain anonymous. If you are homeless or in a bit of strife at the moment, there are plenty of places you can go to get help, like the Matthew Talbot Centre or Youth Off the Streets. Head to our website for some links. And if you pass someone selling a copy of The Big Issue, then make sure you pick up a copy. They've just celebrated 15 years. Half of the cost goes directly to the person you bought it from, and it's always a great read. You're in All the Best this morning, where we are exploring the theme of residence. And we're also asking you, what's been your worst share house experience? Let us know, 0409 945 945. Cassio Tone for The Painfully Alone with Bobby Malone Moves Home. You're listening to FBI 94.5, where this morning We're asking for your stories, your worst sharehouse stories. Text us on 0409 945 945. We've got a pretty great one in, actually, from Anthony, who in the summer of 2008 moved to Melbourne to study for an honours degree in the middle of a rental crisis. He moved 6 times between short-term stays, sleeping on the floor of his friends' places over the period of 2 months. He was reading for his thesis on trams between house inspections and was living on 1 meal a day. One day, he finally landed a place. His new flatmate took his deposit and told him he could move into the place in 1 week. When he got there, he let himself in to find she wasn't there, only a few things left in her room. No one came to the house for a week. Then a guy showed up to the door and told Anthony that he shouldn't be living there, as an eviction notice had been served weeks earlier. He had to move yet again, which is horrendous. Tell us your horror stories of sharehouse living. 0409 945 945. It's all part of our exploration of residence, where, still to come, we hear what it's like to look at moving after 19 years in the one spot.
Stories from Sydney on All the Best.
If you're the first generation in your family born in Australia, life growing up in your family home may have seemed something like this. Benjamin Law is a Brisbane-based writer. Here he tells you what it was like growing up in the Law household. And I must warn you, he tells it with some strong language, which was too integral for the story for us to cut. So apologies and enjoy.
When my dad sees an English word in the newspaper he doesn't understand, he points to it and asks us for the definition. He'll say it a few times to himself, rolling the word in his mouth and chewing on it, until the meaning and the sound collide, soften and stick to his brain like gum. Likewise, when my mum learns a new word from television or conversation, she writes it down in a notebook. If the word is particularly tricky, she asks me to spell and define it, then scrawls it down onto scrap paper and sticky tapes it to the wall to help her remember its meaning and spelling, the way foreign language students do in the lead up to exams. Even now, the word diarrhea is stuck to the dining room wall. In this way, every migrant family is the same. Children learn from their parents, parents learn from their children. It's all very educational. Controversially though, Mum insists she first learned the word cunt from me. I don't remember the exact circumstances clearly enough to verify the claim, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were true. Mum says that afterwards, as often seems to happen when you've learned a new word or concept, she inexplicably started seeing and hearing it everywhere. The next night on SBS, she told me, there was this European movie with a woman screaming at her husband because she found out he was having an affair. She yelled to him, "You only like her because her c*** smells like eggplant." That's what it said in the subtitles. And suddenly I realised that I knew what this word was. Cunt. It was the same word you told me not to use at parent-teacher meetings. She paused to think. I wonder whether I would have worked out its meaning if I hadn't heard it from you. Smells like eggplant. Yes, I think I would have. Apparently I'd given her strict instructions at the time not to use the word amongst friends or even with her gynecologist. She understood but has since embarked on a lifelong covert love affair with the word. The lawn mowing man who screwed her over? She knows just the word to use. The drunken New Year's revelers who left beer bottles in her yard? There's only one word to describe people like that. In stark contrast to the dedication of my parents, I've become complacent about Cantonese over the years, to the extent that I'm now uncertain whether I can lay claim to the language at all. Now and then, the same ticker box question comes up in forms and surveys, questionnaires and applications, leaving me confused and anxious. Do you come from a non-English speaking background? It asks. Yes, no. It seems like such a straightforward thing to ask, but my pen always wavers. Eventually, I select either yes or no at random. Looking back, I've probably filled out a 50-50 share of yeses and noes. What is your language background? What language do you speak at home? They seem like such simple questions, but they're not. Cantonese is the language predominantly spoken by my parents and the main language spoken in Hong Kong, Macau, and southern parts of China. In and of itself, it's one messed up dialect. The audio instructors on my Teach Yourself Colloquial Cantonese CDs are more technical and polite about it, referring to it as a
language.
This means the same syllables, pronounced in different pitches, can mean completely different, incongruous things. Consider this sentence. Go, 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 go. That older brother there. Go, go. Is taller than. Go, 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 go. That other brother there. Again, that's.
Go, 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 go. Go, 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 go.
Pause, then add another. Go. With a different tone this time. And you're telling the same brother to cross the road. Depending on how you say it. Go can mean dog or nine, enough or rescue. May could mean rice or not yet, flavour or tail. Because of its tonal quality, linguists describe Cantonese as a language that's sung, which might suggest the language is pretty or melodious. But songs can also be terrible and cruel. Think of the late night moans of the feral cat, the broken wail of the American coyote, or the screeching of the rabies-infested bat. To my ears, Cantonese is not a sung language at all, but a screamed one, a dialect for bickering, exclaiming over scandals, and haggling over meat prices. But hey, who am I to say? My parents speak Cantonese to me, and while I understand most of what they're saying, I'm basically mute when it comes to speaking the language myself. To outsiders, that seems like an odd arrangement, but the analogy I use is music. Everyone understands the language of music, has an innate comprehension of how it works, but not everyone can play it. When it comes to Cantonese, I can understand the music, but I can't replicate it. Cantonese might be a tonal language, but over the years I've become tone deaf.
Benjamin Law, reading an excerpt from his book The Family Law, published by Black Ink Books last year. That story was recorded by audio journal Paper Radio and is available in full at paperradio.net. You're on All the Best this morning. We're looking at residents. Our next song comes from Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, in This Home on Ice. Best on FBI at 94.5, where this morning we've been, we continue to explore the theme of residents. You may have picked up on that theme through all the songs we've been hearing, the last one by Peter Broderick called Not At Home from his Home record. We've also been asking you throughout the program today to text us in your worst share house living experiences, 0409 945 945. If you've got something you just can't keep inside. We've got another one through from someone who moved into a house in Melbourne with a girl who she thinks was obsessive compulsive, but not in a clean way, in a foul, collect everything she ever touched kind of way. This listener had to draw the line when the habit extended from the bedroom to the kitchen when she froze a green chicken and some pungent stew. And from then, They had to ask her to chuck it. This person is just new to Sydney and embarking on the shared mission again. I hope you have a bit more success in sourcing some housemates than that.
All the best.
Stories from Sydney.
On FBI.
When you live and work in Sydney, life can be quite frenetic at times. What a dream, then, to have a sanctuary outside of the city where you can lie on the veranda in the sunshine, watch the surf and be fussed over by loving relatives. James Reid is one such lucky Sydney resident. When the city gets too much, he hops in the car, drives north for an hour, and pulls into the driveway of 35 Arden Avenue in Avoca Beach. His grandparents, John and Alison, have lived here for the last 19 years, and their house has become a haven for the entire Reid family. Madeline James went up to Avoca to spend the day with James and his grandparents.
I'm spending the day at the home of John and Alison Reid, or as they're known to their 14 grandchildren, Lal and Gramps. I'm here with James, their eldest grandchild. He once described to me that walking into this house was like stepping into a warm embrace. And it might sound corny, but it's definitely true.
Hello.
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 My name's James and we're in Avoca, where my grandparents live. They live in a beautiful house. It's kind of like a house on stilts in the gum trees. And the house is full of arts and crafts from our family and made by them. My uncle, who's an architect, he says that the house has a certain vibration, a peaceful vibration about it that encourages deep rest and stillness, and I would have to agree with that. My grandfather has Parkinson's and it's affecting his legs pretty badly, and he's kind of the sole carer for my grandmother, who's just been diagnosed with dementia, and they're kind of getting to the point where things are deteriorating and it's getting a bit harder to live on their own. We've got a large family. They had 6 children, and at the moment we're in an unorganized fashion trying to create a roster system to care for them. Someone will come and stay, bring some food or help out around the garden, and maybe cook meals for a week, a soup or something like that. You know, and it's a great feeling being able to help them out. And I think we'd all like to do it more often and to be there on a more full-time basis, but it's hard as well.
Can you pass the bag?
Please? 1 second, Lal. I've just got to get the rest of my tiles.
Oh, sorry. I thought you hadn't.
James has come into Avoca today to talk to his grandfather, John, about the prospect of them having to move one day. But first, the family settles down for a mandatory game of Scrabble on the veranda.
All right, 4, 5, 6, 7, 14. 14. That's for me, Lala. That's right.
Well, we had a house in Sydney, which is a terrace house in Balmain.
This is the voice of John, James's grandfather.
A lovely place to live in, but it had no garden, and Alison quite correctly thought that I'd go bonkers in time with that somewhere to scratch around in. And she was quite right too, so we came up here.
Alison, John's wife and James's grandmother, is having a nap down the other end of the veranda. David, James's uncle, has gone to sweep in the garden. James and John are left to have a chat about the house and the future.
Was it important to have a house that the rest of the family come and stay at?
Very important, because we want the rest of the family to come.
Yeah.
This was ideal. Then there have been very happy memories with family, and especially at Christmas time or some birthdays or something like that.
Has the place changed, and have you become very attached to it? And like, does
the house is more beautiful now than it was when we came, and the garden's improved, responded to our care, and I've been thrown myself into the garden, and it's in good shape, and we love the area. It's a beautiful area. When we moved into this street here, people came into our house while the removers were bringing the luggage, the furniture in, to welcome us. Okay. See, we're in a community of people. It was different.
Yeah. And so, this is the dread question, and I dread it myself, but the prospect of leaving here, you know, I know that doesn't sit well with you and doesn't sit well with me, but is that a prospect? Is that something that might happen?
It's a prospect. It's a prospect which I don't like. Mm. Firstly, I don't like it because I'm Alison's carer, yeah. And she's done so much for me all her life and thrown herself into my work and my life, and it's been a privilege the last few years to be her carer. Yeah. I'd hate to get to the situation where I cease to care for her. I hate it because I don't want to lose my independence, and yet I know that's inevitable. I will have to be, and it's proper that I should at a certain stage, because when I die, I'd like to think that I've got nothing left but the grace of God to hang on to, and I know that it's inevitable, perhaps, that I say to her, I can't keep myself clean and people have to wipe my bottom all those sorts of things, and that's not so pleasant. But nevertheless, the time is coming when I won't be able to keep going. And so I've written to the family, that is our children and our sons-in-law and daughters-in-law, to say that in the month of August, September, they might like to make a decision what they think we should do. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be prepared to abide by that, because they know our interests and our future. Yeah. We have a little horseplay. We turn to the street and I say, this is the best street I know. Alison says, yes. She comes to the house and she says, this is a nice house. Mm-hmm. Nice people live here. We usually say something stupid like that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll keep moving around.
I'll wander around. And then I'll have a nap. Big nap. Hello?
Gonna have a snooze?
Yeah.
As James leaves John and Lal to go and find a couch to have a nap on, he has a final thought about the prospect of them moving one day.
Yeah, it would be very hard. I think if we had to go and visit them in a home or something that didn't have the same heart and charm as where they are now, that would be very hard.
We'll grow old together. We'll grow old together. And this love will never. This old love.
That was James Reid, the home of his grandparents, John and Alison Reid. That story was produced by Madeline James. That is it for today's show. Thanks so much for tuning in to All the Best and for sending us in your worst sharehouse experiences. We've certainly had a lot of fun living vicariously through your horror stories. Big thanks to our contributors today, Nick Hadlin, Mike Williams, Madeline James, Miles Martignoni, Benjamin Law, Paper Radio, and Gemma Maglioni. Our show today was produced by Gina McEwen. All the Best is produced by myself and Jesse Cox, and our EP, Bridget Dagg. Next week on the show, we talk about all those things you're not supposed to do, like eat each other. Some taboos are more obvious than others, but as we'll hear when explored, they're not all bad. We'll talk to a sex worker who caters to the disabled community, have a giggle at a local comedian who gets his laughs from taboo topics. We'll also hear from a young man who came out to his church at Hillsong. And the week after that, we'll be looking at unrequited love, I'm sure a theme that's close to the hearts of many listeners. For this one, we need a hand from you in picking the music as we turn over the song selections to your unrequited love song dedications. To request a dedication, contact us on Twitter or Facebook or at allthebest@fbiradio.com. Again, that's allthebest@fbiradio.com. Tell us the song you want and who it's for. Your name is optional. Feel free to throw in the tale of your unrequited love if you're happy for us to lament your losses on radio. And then tune in a fortnight from now when we celebrate missed connections and hopeful hearts. Kate Jinks is up next. Thanks so much for listening. It's been all the best. We'll be back again next week from 10 a.m. To get us to Too Much with Kate Jinks, we'll have one last homage to House and Home. Here's Charlie Parker and Mac Woolbright with The Man Who Wrote Home, Sweet Home, Never Was a Married Man. See you next week.
Man gets up early in the morning, leaves his wife in bed. She'll lie there, the kids wakes up and cry, get up and cook some bread. Let me tell you a thing or two that a woman like that will never do. And the man that wrote the home, sweet home, he never would have married man.